We always open family presents the night before our birthdays. And last year when my turn came, I was excited and happy. That is, until Dad stumbled his way to the couch. He fell asleep before I could open the first present. Instead of good wishes, all I got from him were loud snores. I could tell that he had been drinking. Dad bought you a new bicycle, Mom said. It's bright green. Let's go out and see it. I want to see it with Dad. Can't you wake him up? I miss him when he doesn't do things with us. You know, he'll just be grumpy and angry, Maggie. Come on, don't be sad. A bike's a big present. But I'd much rather have had a little present if Dad had only cared enough to give it to me himself. What are you going to wish for when you blow out the candles on your cake? My brother Daniel whispered. Daniel is usually really quiet so that Dad doesn't have a reason to yell at him. I didn't really have to say that all I wanted was for Dad to stop drinking because I knew that we all wished that. Mom bustled around the kitchen. Hurry up and finish breakfast, kids, she said. There's a lot to do before Maggie's party. Beth, can you finish the loot bags while I make the potato salad? Daniel, if you'll walk Candy, it would be a real help. I'll pick up the birthday cake, Dad offered. Mom looked as worried as I felt. Are you sure, dear? What's the matter? Do you think I'll let you down? Dad sounded hurt. Nobody said a word. But I thought about all the times he had let us down by being late, or worse, not even showing up. My stomach was in knots. Beth, Daniel, and I had just finished decorating the house when the doorbell rang. I'd invited my friends over, including Amanda. She's my favorite from school, but she'd never been to my house. I was too worried about what she'd think of my family. We played volleyball in the backyard for a while. When it was time to eat, we finished off our hot dogs and potato salad and carrot sticks. Everyone waited for the cake. It's okay, said Amanda. It was as though she had read my mind. I don't think I could eat another bite. No wonder she's my friend. It seemed like forever, but Dad had finally arrived, wearing a silly smile, with the ice cream cake. He walked unsteadily inside to the kitchen. We all watched as the cake slipped from his hands and fell onto Candy's head. Nobody knew what to do, except for Candy. She was busy lapping up the sweet mess. Mom yelled at Dad, and Dad yelled back. Daniel hid under the table. Beth stormed out, and I was ready to cry. The guests started phoning their parents to pick them up early. When Amanda left, she gave me a sad little hug as she walked out the door. The next day, I heard kids whispering that my dad was drunk at my party. I was so hurt and angry that I knocked Amanda's lunchbox on the floor. Her surprised look made me feel bad, and I started crying. What's going on? Said Mr. Hubble. Amanda, why don't you and the other kids go outside for recess? I thought for sure that I was in trouble, but I wasn't. People shouldn't talk behind your back, but you shouldn't knock anyone's lunch on the floor. Mr. Hubble's voice was kind. I'm certain you know that, Maggie. Can you tell me why you're so angry? He wanted to know why I was angry. He was being really nice, and I wanted so badly to talk to someone. Could I trust him? Was he a safe person to talk to? I remembered when my friend Max told Mr. Hubble about his parents' divorce. Max said Mr. Hubble was a great listener. I took a deep breath. I got so upset and embarrassed at my birthday party. My friends saw everything, and now they're telling people my dad was drunk. My parents had a big fight. Everything is such a mess. I talked and I talked. Mr. Hubble said, "Maybe your dad does drink too much alcohol, Maggie. Some people who drink too much can't stop, and they end up saying and doing things that hurt the people they love. Sometimes the people who get hurt don't like to talk about it. Does it help now that you've told me?" I nodded, but I started to cry. Mr. Hubble's voice was gentle. "Are your worries the reason your report card wasn't as good as it could have been?" I nodded again and reached for the tissue that Mr. Hubble handed me. "I think it might help if you talk to Miss Yi. Lots of kids do. She's a great school counselor. There are tons of families like yours." All the way home, I thought about what Mr. Hubble had said. I was scared to tell Mom. What if she was mad that I told our family secrets to my teacher? Mom had enough to worry about. But she surprised me. "Maggie, I can tell you're upset about Dad's drinking and what happened at the party. You should know we both love all three of you and we're trying to make things better. Would it be okay if I talked to the school counselor, Mom? I think that's a good thing to do. I'm really proud of you, Maggie." "You might not be when you see this," I said. I gave Mom my report card. "I'm disappointed, but I understand," she said. After dinner, while I was doing my homework, I heard Dad crying and throwing things around the living room. I thought he was upset because of my report card. It must be my fault. The next day at school, I went to see Miss Yi. I asked her the question that troubled me most. "Is it my fault that Dad drinks too much?" "You didn't cause this problem, Maggie," she said, "and it's not your problem to fix. Sometimes you and your brother and sister may feel upset by what's going on at home. It's important to talk to an adult that you trust about your thoughts and feelings." I thought for a moment. "Like my grandma," I said, "I can call her whenever I feel like it, and I can also walk next door to our neighbor Melba's house when things get bad at home." "Those are fine ideas, Maggie. You can also call a kid's helpline." My mom told me that Dad's father had a problem with alcohol. Does that mean I'll have a problem too? The idea scared me. There are lots of things you can do to prevent that. You have so many things in your life that make you happy, like good friends, music, drawing, playing on the basketball team, and singing in the school choir. And most important, you're good at talking about your feelings. You don't need alcohol to make you feel good. On the way home, I had another horrible thought. What if Mom started to have problems with alcohol too? That night, when Mom came to say goodnight, I blurted out my question. "Mom, do you think you'll start drinking too much like Dad does?" "That's never been a problem for me, Maggie," she said. "I can stop after a drink or two, but I don't drink with Dad because he feels tempted to drink too. So people can drink and not have problems?" "A lot of people do that," she said. "Alcohol is only a problem for some people. I don't understand why people would drink when it causes so much trouble." Mom thought for a moment. "At first, drinking can make people feel happy or more relaxed. They like that feeling. But if you drink too much, you get drunk, and that can make you feel tired, angry, sad, or sick to your stomach. It can even make you feel sick the next day." A couple of days later, we were having breakfast when Mom and Dad said they had an important announcement. Dad cleared his throat. "We've been here to see Dr. Gupta, and she's helping me with my drinking problem. Mom and I are going to work on things together. Dr. Gupta explained that you kids shouldn't blame yourselves for my bad decisions. She also helped me find a counselor for more help. Beth, Daniel, and I looked at each other. Did this mean things would get better around our house? The months passed, and Dad pretty much stopped drinking. He started to spend more time with Beth, Daniel, and me. He even came to my basketball games with the rest of my family. It felt great to see him clapping for me. One day, as we walked home from the park, he said, "Maggie, I'm starting to feel better about myself. I didn't even realize my drinking was a problem until your party. Now I know it affects the whole family. I'm trying hard not to drink anymore. I'm sorry for the trouble I've caused you." Dad held my hand for the first time in a long while. I thought about the things that had changed since Dad stopped drinking. Daniel wasn't so nervous that Dad would yell at him, and Beth didn't argue all the time. We're doing family things again, and I was doing way better in school. I could study better when I didn't have to worry about helping Dad. It wasn't my problem to solve. I had enough dealing with math. But just when I thought we were fine, something terrible happened. Mom asked Dad to take out the garbage. He had been drinking again. I guess Dad didn't want to help take out the garbage because he got angry and started kicking the recycle bin, which tipped over my bike. My bike got all scratched and bent. I went to talk to Miss Yee about how scared I felt. "I can see you're disappointed and confused and angry, Maggie. How could this happen? I was ready to cry." When people are trying to stop drinking, they sometimes slip and start drinking again. It sounds like that's what happened. But why did he get so angry and start kicking the garbage cans? When people drink, they can make bad decisions. Even with the setback, Dad didn't give up trying to stop drinking. His counselor helped him understand that he should work fewer hours, spend more time with the family, and do the hobbies that he used to enjoy. He started gardening again. By my next birthday, we had some of the fruits and vegetables he'd grown, along with cake and ice cream, of course. When it was time to blow out the candles, I made my usual wish. "Please don't let Dad come home drunk." Everyone was smiling as Dad came in, covered in green paint. He was carrying a bright neon green helmet with cool racing stripes. "Let's all go outside," he said. There in the yard was my bicycle. It was fixed and painted a shiny green, and it looked better than ever. It was a great present, but the best present of all was that Dad hadn't been drinking. There will probably be more ups and downs, but I really hope he can do it. That's my biggest wish of all.
Good morning. Thank you for all coming. It's with great pleasure I come talk to you today, combined with a little fear, maybe a lot of fear, but anyway. I'd like to give you some statistics on alcoholism. The Center for Disease Control lists that there are 88,000 deaths per year from alcohol. That's more than all other drug overdoses combined. There are 18 million problem drinkers in the U.S. One of four children grew up in an alcoholic home, and one alcoholic affects at least four others. 29% of highway deaths are linked to alcohol. It's the single largest health problem in the U.S. The normalized excessive use of alcohol is ingrained in our media and culture. The alcohol epidemic is not being addressed with the veracity and news coverage that opiates get. And I personally believe that 95% of the world's pain and suffering has its roots in alcohol. And, it's a heavy subject to talk about, but I want to first of all share what I'm grateful for. This church and its openness in our philosophy that we are religion neutral and we have love and compassion for our fellow man, including the underprivileged. And we care about our planet, which is a big point with me. The serendipity I'd like to talk about of first coming here. A friend that I met in California took me to this church the very first weekend when I returned here 8 years ago. And I was hooked on the very first song, and that was John Lennon's Imagine. And I spent the next couple of years really searching for, is this the right place here, going as far away as Somerville, Boston, only to come back here, where I've been a regular for the past 6 years. And I took Susan, my wife, here when we first met 4 years ago. And I'm grateful to my wife for our wonderful relationship. And they were married here 1.5 years ago right here in this church. I'm a grandchild of an alcoholic and a longtime member of Al-Anon. Now, Al-Anon is a support group for people that have been affected by somebody else's drinking. I've come to see my own father as a very wounded product of having grown up in a violent alcoholic home. He couldn't give me the love and the validation that I needed to grow up with a healthy sense of self because he didn't have it in him to give. The man that raised me was a cold and distant man that never showed any affection, never showed that he loved or cared about me in any way or anyone else in our family. I attribute all of my life's pain, including job losses and a very painful divorce, to this. And I've come to understand the greatest trauma a child can experience is to be unloved. And this is why alcoholism creates such damage in our children and in our society. You know, alcoholism is slow degradation of one's mind, body, and spirit. It negatively changes the normal loving thoughts and numbs the normal feelings, including shame and guilt, where criminal and immoral behavior can take over. Lying, cheating, infidelity, inappropriate touching, incredibly hurtful words. Alcohol produces a self-loathing and a self-hatred. And when you hate yourself, you cannot adequately love a child or others. Alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And those around the alcoholic can be more psychologically hurt than the alcoholic themselves. I know of two alcoholics that have died from alcoholic liver failure in the past 8 months. Children lost fathers, mothers and fathers lost children, siblings lost brothers, former wives or families are trying to put the pieces back together. And alcoholism thrives in single family homes where the ugliness is hidden from those around the home, outside the home, I should say. And to reiterate, there are 18 million problem drinkers in the U.S. 120 million of us regularly consume alcoholic beverages. Many people don't drink. Southern Baptists, Seventh-day Adventists, Muslims, and people like my mom and dad that chose not to drink. My father didn't drink because he knew that alcohol turned his father into a raving lunatic, and it was something that he did not want to continue. My mom basically came from a non-drinking family. So that's, if you do the numbers, that's 15% of us that regularly consume alcoholic beverages can become problem drinkers. And alcohol is an incredibly addictive and common drug, and it's a gateway drug to other drugs. My own counselor says that it's an epidemic and that we live in an alcoholic society. Now, this is a startling fact. All of the World War II Axis leaders were either alcoholics themselves or grew up in alcoholic homes. I believe their thirst for power and world dominance was fueled by alcohol. Hitler and Hirohito grew up in violent alcoholic homes. Stalin, our ally, and Mussolini were both alcoholics and grew up in alcoholic homes. Now, these people are responsible for tens of millions of deaths, and many serial killers are alcoholics as well. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, alcoholism is a family disease. An alcoholic can totally disrupt family life and cause harmful effects that last a lifetime. 76 million American adults have been exposed to alcoholism in the family, Alcoholism is responsible for more family problems than any other single cause. Parental alcoholism has severe effects on normal children of alcoholics. And what I mean by normal is those excluding things like fetal alcohol syndrome that is caused by drinking mothers. Many of these children have common symptoms such as low self-esteem, loneliness, guilt, feelings of helplessness, fears of abandonment, and chronic depression. And that's from a study by Berger in 93. Children of alcoholics often feel responsible for problems of alcoholics and are people who have been robbed of their childhood. And if untreated as children, they carry their problems into later life. And grandchildren of alcoholics such as me can be equally hurt as adult children of alcoholics with all the same symptoms that I mentioned above. And I've read that like 95% of one's self-esteem is earned by a child that's 2 years old. African two-year-olds are the most advanced on the planet because they are always held in this little alcoholism. And this is why it's incredibly important, I believe, for children to be raised in sober, loving, and healthy homes. And that it's incredibly difficult to change this negative self-image if they are not. Our own media portrays drinking as a source of happiness. You all know them with young adults drinking on tops of the rooftops, everybody with a beer in their hand, right? Yet it says nothing of the damage that it caused to our society. The alcohol industry in 2016, spent $1.6 billion on advertising and promotion, and that includes drink placements in movies and shows to convince us their products will make us happy. And 89% of that is spent on television advertising. My own experience as a grandchild of an alcoholic, to elaborate more, is I grew up with a father that did not drink, but he ignored me and isolated himself watching TV. He never touched or held me affectionately or said he loved me or said any kind word to me or anyone in our family or showed that he approved of me in any way. No feelings were ever talked about, which is an extreme handicap because you can't properly communicate with others. Feelings, like I see feelings in life as the rudders in life, rather. They signal danger when to stay away or when to move closer when receive signals of acceptance or love. Now, I grew up feeling unloved, unwanted, defective, inferior, and stupid. My own self-image was tiny, all right? I believed I wasn't good enough, I wasn't smart enough, didn't do enough, and didn't deserve good things in life. And I can tell you that that's an awful way to grow up. My greatest character weaknesses, even today, that I still work on, are feeling defeated when confronted by others' criticism and feeling inferior in the presence of authority figures. But I also want to tell you about my beautiful wife, Susan, in the back there, and how grateful I am to Al-Anon and for what all Al-Anon has done for me. You know, we have such a harmonious and loving, kind relationship that I am incredibly grateful for. And we read Al-Anon and other spiritual literature together, pray and meditate together, and we do it on a regular basis. And today, I live a very sweet life. My parents, in contrast, I want to tell you about my parents. They had such an awful, yucky, and tension-filled relationship due to my father being so incredibly hurt. My mother loved me unconditionally, yet the greatest damage she did to my brother and myself was not having the courage, strength, and the knowledge as a good Catholic woman to leave my father, which I dreamed about. My father fell into a deep depression and was treated for anxiety and depression when my mother died at age 67. I came into Al-Anon shortly after this, and I had just enough Al-Anon to ask him what it was like growing up in his own home. And he had had just enough treatment to be able to communicate with me and tell me, all right? He described his father, my grandfather, a man that I didn't know because he died of alcoholism before I was born. This was a person that he hated, and my grandfather was an angry, scrapping drunk. My father was afraid to go home. Things were okay when my grandfather wasn't drinking, but when he was, there'd be yelling, screaming, and violence. He described incidents such as my father was hit with a buckle end of a belt once and caused him to bleed profusely, and my grandfather came at him with a digging hoe in front of all of his friends as of age 13, out of rage, you know. And you can imagine, if you can only imagine how to a 13-year-old that's trying to first build his confidence and being around all his friends and having his own father come at him with a digging hoe, and you know what? How awful that must have been. My father never did that kind of thing to me. Now, it turns out that shortly after that, I had asked one of my uncles what he thought about his father. He responded this way. He said, "We all hated him," meaning all the four brothers, all had hated his father. My father grew up thinking that he was the only one that hated his father, right? And that's because of the don't talk, don't feel, don't trust rules that go on in alcoholic homes. And alcoholics will isolate and conquer their victims. Now, a little more history about my father. You know, when my father was 26 years old, Pearl Harbor was bombed. So he was drafted into the Army as a medic and an ambulance driver. And we were told that he was a changed man after the war. So most likely he suffered a significant amount of post-traumatic stress, but was never treated in that until 45 years later, until what I just previously mentioned. And adult children of alcoholics are 10 times more likely to suffer from post-traumatic stress because they grew up in a home where they never felt safe. Now, I had, after my father telling me all this, I immediately forgave him, and I could understand, because I had just enough Al-Anon, I came to understand that why he was the incredibly hurt man that he was. And that I'm very grateful for Al-Anon for the last 17 years of my father's life, that he and I were friends. And I was able to give him the support that he needed after the death of my mother, and I'm incredibly grateful. Something like 90% of adult children cannot recognize a parental drinking problem. You know, that's because they grew up with the drinking and they just think it's normal. Even my previous doctor, you know, who was a Middle Eastern man of about 40 years old, I told him that when I first started seeing him that, you know, I was a longtime Al-Anon member, and he said, "What's that?" You know, so our medical community is not adequately educated about the disease of alcoholism and some of the help that's available. So in Al-Anon, we provide help and hope for families and friends affected by somebody else's drinking. Our meetings provide an education for us to learn what we didn't get in our own dysfunctional homes and to heal from living with the effects of alcoholism, to learn the things that children who grew up in healthy homes receive. I see it as a social laboratory where it's safe to say what's in our minds and hearts. I've been attending Al-Anon meetings for 23 years because I want to live life to the fullest, and I want to carry the message of help and hope to others. I first knew that I belonged in Al-Anon. After reading one of these Al-Anon brochures, so now it says, did you grow up with a problem drinker? And it's got 20 questions here. Now, I answered yes to most of the 20 questions, even though I'm a grandchild of an alcoholic. But it was like these questions were created for me. Some of them, I'll just read a few. Do you constantly seek approval and affirmation? Do you fail to recognize your accomplishments? Do you fear criticism? Do you overextend yourself? Do you have problems with your own compulsive behavior? Do you have a need for perfection? And that last one is really innate. Probably an inordinate amount of time preparing for this speech, too. Thank you for your laughter. All right. So I actually, with this brochure and this other one here too, are you troubled by somebody's drinking? It's got 20 questions that are similar. I've left a stack of these on the table up back there too. So you can go get, you can grab one after. So if you have a family member or friend where their drinking bothers you, Al-Anon can probably help you. Our meetings are free, local, and anonymous, where your identity and stories are held private. I encourage you to pick up and read one of these brochures that I've left there. You may also find help in an Al-Anon meeting if you're affected by somebody else's drug use. Although in Al-Anon we focus on the drinking component, which is often part of the mix. There's a good chance you may be able to assist the problem drinking in seeking sobriety by getting your help, by getting help for yourself or your family members in Al-Anon as you learn to detach and allow the alcoholic to suffer their own consequences of their drinking. And you learn how unwittingly you may have contributed to the drinking by enabling them, such as covering their bad checks or calling into work for them when they're too hungover to get there. Google to find local meetings in your desired area. Locally here, meetings are held on a weekly basis. In Thursday nights, it's a newcomer meeting in Nashua. In Milford here, they're held on Monday nights. That's a regular meeting. I also encourage you to watch the movie My Name is Bill W., with James Woods as Bill Wilson and James Gardner as Dr. Bob. They are the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's one of my most favorite movies. It shows the devastation of alcohol and shows the incredibly positive spiritual movement that when AA was formed. M. Scott Peck says of the formation of AA and the 12 steps as being the greatest positive event of the 20th century. This movie also shows the importance of Lois Wilson, the co-founder of Al-Anon, you know, who was the spouse of Bill W. And as a district rep for Al-Anon in the Fitchburg area, I am, we started a teen meeting there. It's called Al-A-Teen at Fitchburg High School. It's for kids that were raised in alcoholic homes. The administration, school counselors, and the nursing director were all highly supportive as they recognized the multi-generational effects and problems of alcoholism that causes in the schools. So, I feel free to come talk to me after the service today, or you can get my number so you know we can talk later on. Thank you for coming.